You're listening to a Mint podcast brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hi, I'm Shovik Das. I'm Leslie DeMonte.
And I'm Deepti Ahuja. You're listening to Mint Etc.,
a podcast where we will talk about important developments in technology
and how they will transform our lives, work, and play as we know it.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Tech Cetera. This is a podcast where Leslie, Deepti, and I discuss everything tech. In fact, everything under the sun, by the looks of how the past episodes and our past conversations have gone. And we've learned a fair amount about each other. Deepti, as I have reiterated in every episode, will definitely buy a $200 AI assistant. We're also curious to find out more about her shopping list, which we hope to eventually find out in due course of time. I've also just learned, just before we started recording the episode, that Leslie has tried out the Apple Vision Pro, the headset which costs more than, well, I don't know, more than cars, the pre-booking amount of houses, a good European holiday, a lot of things. So before we go on discussing other things in this episode, Leslie, I'll just start with, how has your experience been with the Apple Vision Pro? Because everyone's really hyped about it.
Yeah, I mean, so it was loaned to me by a friend. I did not buy it. I'm not going to spend 360,000 on the Apple Vision Pro. But what intrigued me, or what really got me to use it, and I asked my friend, because my friend is, he's a guy who actually experiments with the metaverse. So he has created these experience centers, and he has used the HoloLens. He uses the Apple Vision Pro, and he also has the Quest 3. So it was an interesting combination. So I was just talking to him. He said, okay, why don't you try it? And I tried it it was an incredible experience. Honestly, I don't typically use a lot of adjectives, but I love the experience. What I've found after some time, let's say about 5 minutes or so, I found my head heavy, because it is the point is, I think it's about 450 grams or so. I forget what is the weight of the thing, but you actually feel it. It gets a little weighty, you know. So it's like aadha kilo sar pe hai, say, for right, telling somebody in Hindi. So it sounds really weighty. And it's a little hard. So while the experience is incredible, I don't know how long I could have managed it. And then afterwards, I was reading some reviews of it, including, you know, it was very surprising. What actually got me to ask my friend to loan the Vision Pro was this this talk by Mark Zuckerberg. So where Mark Zuckerberg has become a reviewer, a tech reviewer. So tech reviewers, be aware, those who actually review gadgets. First you had ChatGPT, which was taking away journalist jobs. Now I think he'll take away the tech reviewer's job. But I mean, Jokes apart. So he was talking, giving a sort of a lowdown on, this Vision Pro versus the Quest 3. Now, what, of course, he keeps on, as was expected, he would have a clearly a biased view at this. I can see a clear conflict of interest, but then you won't expect a balanced view when Zuckerberg is talking. So he was talking about the price versus thing. So clearly, when you look at a 46 or 50,000 in Indian rupees, the Quest 3, and compare it with something like 360,000, a Vision Pro headset, obviously there's a big difference. But you know, Zuckerberg, I mean, anybody can go to YouTube and listen to that stuff where he was a little charitable only in a few sections, where he said, oh, the screen is slightly better, but this is better. So it was a hilarious kind of review.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But what I was, when I was talking to my friend, who, as I said, uses it for, like, in the metaverse, and I asked him the applications, where he told me a very interesting thing. He said, when you look at the Vision Pro, it is more suited to the virtual reality and the self extended, so spatial kind of thing. Whereas the Quest 3 actually can give you mixed reality. So you have virtual reality, augmented reality. So it's more suited to those kind of tasks. And he was explaining that, he's saying, when you use the Vision Pro, he's saying you can actually lie down and watch things, and the images won't get distorted. Whereas, because you're dealing with mixed reality in the headset, the Quest 3, yeah, you have limitations of things. So I found those observations very, very interesting, and I tried it. So I just, you know, sort of lay down on the bed, and I could actually really experience the Vision Pro stuff, which right. I was, of course, and you have the App Store, you can download some apps depending right. on the pricing and all that. So I would say probably you'll have to give it some time, to mature.
To become mature.
And they'll somehow have to figure out a way to reduce the weight.
Right. It's interesting because what Mark Zuckerberg exactly said, I have it open in front of me here, and Zuckerberg's exact word was that it's not just that the Quest 3 is better value, it is a better product, period.
No, I wouldn't go that far. A better value? Yeah. But see, again, as I said, mixed reality versus, you know, the virtual reality,
right.
VR kind of headset or... So I am not too sure about whether it right. is a better product.
Right. And in fact, Mark also brought in this entire open model thing that, oh, you know, we're going to build it with support for a bigger ecosystem. Apple's going to work just with Apple devices. Deepthi, we're going to come to you now that we know that your shopping list is a $200
AI. I knew it.
Transcoder. Do we add another $4,000 to it or not?
No, absolutely not. I'm not a little kid who would just look at shiny objects and go like, oh, I want. I'm not like that. No, I don't.
You watch a lot of movies. You like gaming. You like that. So, you know, the Vision Pro is an amazing... It can give you a 70-inch screen. You can just increase the size of the screens. Imagine the kind of experience. It's incredible.
No, my concern is more to do with like health things. Like, I mean, I don't want something that's that heavy on my head, A. And B, I do have like, I can get dizzy really fast. And I don't want, I've always stayed away from AR, VR, all these kind of things. It's not my cup of tea. I think that there are more people like me who probably might suffer from vertigo or, you know, other kind of issues. They might also not want it, at least right now.
No, the interesting part is, I think The Verge has written about how Apple fans are actually starting to return their Vision Pros. Because they are sort of complaining about, you know, headache, eye strain, and much of it is anecdotal. Like some said some blood vessel ruptured and all. Okay. I know. I mean, see, it depends. I mean, I wouldn't know about that. But after I experienced those bouts of dizziness, I thought it was more because we use... I am glued to a laptop most of my time, so I thought probably because of that. So then I started reading up some reviews also. And then I realized, no, you know, for extended periods of time, using these kind of gadgets is... perhaps not the best use of your...
Yeah, we are not meant to do these things at an, you know, for long hours. We are not even meant to stare at our screens for long hours.
Why do you want to bring
the screen so close to your eyes?
Yeah, because by that logic, we are not supposed... We would have not done so many other things. So we are not meant to do
That's
many things.
That's true.
Yeah,
That's
so
true.
I don't
so
think that logic...
So we choose a poison about. And this is not one I want.
Huh, fair enough.
Conversations... I think we should keep our conversations about our screen time and smartphone usage and smartphone addiction for the next episode, because that's going to probably take up another half an hour.
And the problem is you end up with a lot of subjective kind of, you know, observations. So it's a little hard.
Right.
And you need hard data. Yes, hard data has, as I said, when you use the internet, they have shown over a period of time it rewires a brain. But then everything rewires a brain. The use of any other habit, when you have, you inculcate one particular habit, it always rewires a brain. That's how it works.
Right.
One habit with another habit. So we can talk till the cows come home on that.
Right. No, absolutely. But in fact, since we are at the topic of, you know, devices and new form factor devices and all, a lot of... people historically, and I guess Leslie, you would have also reported on this over the years, that one of the key challenges that people have spoken about ever since the time of the Google Glass was that there is a bit of a technical barrier as well as trying to find out whether we can fit in, you know, all the sort of computing power and everything into a glass that is comparable to just a normal pair of spectacles, and then kind of overlay information that is actually required and meaningful. Do you think all of that is really possible, or is that still science fiction for the next couple of decades?
It's a very valid question. In fact, actually, if you look at the Ray-Ban, what Meta has done with the Ray-Ban. Yeah. So for the viewer, listeners, basically, so Meta, which was earlier known as Facebook, so Mark Zuckerberg's company, basically had a tie-up with the Ray-Ban. I think it was about 2 years back or something, 2 or 3 years. I don't know the exact date. But now Ray-Ban glasses are really selling. So it's not that the form factor clearly changes. And a lot of computing power has been put in the Ray-Ban. I think the battery is also outside, and it's people are raving about it. So I know, and I think the sales figures also talk about what they are already doing with it. But having said that, so I had a very interesting conversation with a senior leadership member called Alex from Qualcomm recently. In fact, that interview which I had written about. Now, the interesting part over there, I actually asked him, I said, Alex, what do you feel at any given point in time, will you see the, you know, with all these kind of, see, the processors are becoming extremely powerful. Moore's law is still intact, despite us, you know, saying that you cannot have so many transistors on a chip. But, you know, the thing of doubling, in some way, the tech companies have found a way of doing that. Now, I asked him, I said, can you really get it, this kind of power, into a contact lens?
Right.
No. Obviously, I mean, he said, no, we are too far off. I said, this is my wish list. I would have, you know, wished if you could get extended reality or mixed reality in your contact lens. But of course, I mean, it is one thing to wish for it and the kind of computing power that gets into it. It is like, you know, talking about artificial general intelligence and not realizing the kind of work that goes into making machines as intelligent and as smart as human beings. Mm-hmm. So there's always those comparisons. But no, at this point in time, getting it into a kind of a contact lens, making it that light, will take some years. Absolutely. But having said that, yes, I mean, they will. I think I'm a techno-optimist. I think we will get there eventually.
Right. Even I feel so. Even I feel so. But Deepthi, let's, if we get, like a standard piece of spectacle, standard piece of eyewear which looks good, which gives you alternate and mixed reality and augmented reality, not alternate reality, augmented reality, yes, and costs like, I don't know, $200, the sweet spot for your shopping list, would you buy it?
What is this thing that you're playing with me? It's like a sales channel. It's just going
on.
We are just telling our listeners that you are richer than us.
Achha, yes. You're just telling our listeners that kaise tabhi karke isko involve karna hai na.
$200 is like the sweet spot for everything shopping for Deepthi. Anything.
It's like the Asian Sky, whatever channel that was, that used to talk about products. But okay, so I'm quite an optimist like Leslie about technology. Okay, I don't understand it as much as you guys do. And I'm quite an amateur when it comes to understanding technology in that sense. But I am an optimist. And my influence comes again from cinema, right? So there are two lines of thoughts over here. One is the cyberpunk and the other one is the solarpunk side of, you know, futuristic vision, right? And I'm more keen on the solarpunk side of things, where technology does actually help advance humanity. And so if I do get glasses, which also help me with like the basics, where, you know, it helps me read better, it helps me do things better, if I need that kind of visual help, right? If I need that. Then there is a mixed reality, AR, VR, which does not harm my health in any way, I'd love to go for it. So I'm all for solarpunk and I'm all for optimistic technology out there.
it's good to know that we are all optimists in this space, at least when it comes to technology.
Who's actually like totally against it?
You know, I'm pretty sure there are a host of contrarian voices who say all of this is nonsense. We should get back to the 1970s and read physical newspapers. I do agree, read physical newspapers.
I actually like reading books. I can't do Kindle and stuff.
Absolutely.
In every generation, you have what are known as Luddites. You always have people who think, you know, I want to live off the grid. So I'm not saying that it is not possible, but you have to ask yourself, unless, you know, you are a kind of an ascetic or a mendicant or something like that, why would you want to live off the grid? Because see, I mean, with every generation, you have to think about the positive impact. Every technology is a double-edged sword. Let's be clear about it. Okay, everything.
Absolutely.
Okay, unless, you know, I always say it, like even 3D printing. Now, you could make 3D printing guns, for instance. The point is, you can use it for, you know, increasing manufacturing output, for making better artifacts, or you can use it to make a gun. Now, somebody thought about that. The applications, I think, nobody really has a control. Same goes for AI, same goes for blockchain, same goes for every technology that you have. But having said that, also, there's one, you know, thing of kind of a school of thought, which says that, okay, you know, when you make a technology like nuclear power, it destroys. It's not necessary, again, because nuclear power, again, can be used. It's an amazing source of energy. It can, you know,
clean energy.
Yeah, if harnessed, it can be clean energy. So, I mean, it's really hard, you know. I mean, you can empathize with the person who says that, you know, technology is misused, but it's a way of life. I mean, I don't know. You can't set
ultimately the clock. It's us, no, who make use of this technology.
Yeah.
So we have to have a certain mindset towards it. It's us and it's our responsibility.
Yeah. Absolutely. But, and you know, on that regard, in fact, one of the things that I just got reminded of is that I had spoken with, I remember when I used the first headset, which was Samsung's, it was based on the Google Cardboard. It wasn't even sophisticated. And I think this was in 2015, which is almost a decade ago.
Wow.
It was basic, but it was still fascinating for us because we were like, oh, this is so cool. We can turn around and we can shoot lasers and all of that.
Yeah.
And I remember speaking with a mental health expert at that point who had said that an increasing proliferation of VR and AR devices is going to lead us to greater distractions, which in turn is going to lead to greater problems in the society, reduced attention spans and so on and so forth. And one of the things that reduced attention spans and increased distractions came up was recently in my conversation with a bunch of cybersecurity companies who said very interestingly that a value of almost $1 billion, which are being lost to UPI scams, specifically UPI scams, are happening largely due to distractions and users just keying in their UPI pins while being distracted, thinking that, oh, this is just second nature to us. And I think in January, UPI transactions crossed $220 billion per month. With over 12.5 billion transactions every month. It is ridiculous, the volume. It's 9 times the total volume of all card transactions in India. And that seems fairly alarming because I think between all of us, I'm pretty sure that we all know at least one person who's faced such a scam.
Yeah.
There's a saying, you know, that there's a sucker born every minute. Now the problem is you feel bad. but it is a little sad.
Said we know one person at least who's done that. Are you calling them?
I mean, the problem is also, for instance, RBI has put out a lot of instructions, okay, that, like, say, for instance, in QR codes, literally, if you see, RBI has put out instructions and a lot of celebrities are coming out and telling you that, you know, when you scan a QR code, it is for payment. It is not for receipts.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, a simple thing like that. Same with OTP. Now, if you're using an OTP in with public Wi-Fi, you know that there is nothing called a free lunch.
Yeah.
You're going to have a big issue that there could be somebody who's hacking into your phone. There's somebody who could, you know, like you use the near field communication, because nowadays you have everything on a tap. So you start tapping on the phone and the end of story. You know that this, I mean, you look at these Facebook, the shorts or the TikTok videos also, they'll show you so many cases over there. So it's not that, you know, this is that people aren't aware of it. It is, I think, more important that one could be the distraction part of it. The second is using public Wi-Fis and cyber cafes and all in certain places. They're still using somebody else's, like, I mean, I have never understood why would you want to use somebody else's laptop to do internet banking? I would be very, very scared about it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know?
I mean, I personally don't even use mobile banking, which I think is pretty secure nowadays. There's a two-factor authentication and all. But
yeah.
I am a little concerned about the kind of data that apps put out. So I'm a little particular about it. Though actually a banking app, anyway, they have all your data, to be fair. So there's really not any special data that you will be giving them that they really don't have with you. And so having said that, a lot of things have been, they have been securing the process. But see, hackers and cyber criminals will always stay a step ahead. So I'm curious to know, to what are the kind of options that you have? Because all the options are hackable.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And in fact, that's one of the things, like when I was speaking with, you know, all the cybersecurity folks. So my question was this, that what is the solution? And they were like, so some of them were like, oh, you can use email, scanners. And I was like, but, you know, scammers are not going to mail me saying, dear sir, please use this email.
Exactly.
It generally always happens on Twitter and all these places. So they were like, yeah, so the only option is awareness and for UPI apps to add an increasing number of filters where you're repeatedly asked, please verify your recipient, please verify if you want to send or receive. But I think it largely comes down to users. And in that regard, I personally feel that, when we were much younger, I remember my parents would say, the older generations would say that, you know, we'd rather not use technology as far as money is concerned, as far as serious paperwork of, land, of house and all of this is concerned. We'd rather lock it up, put it into a bank locker and keep it there. There's no need for technology to interfere with any of that. And I think new generations come in and they are more, we were the ones who were like, online transaction, yay. E-commerce is great and all of that. And I think now newer generations, I'm guessing, would probably perceive it differently.
There's tremendous value in digitizing stuff. It reduces the cost of paperwork. It reduces the cost of, it makes e-governance very simple. It increases the convenience. So the problem is when, the issue out here is, I think it's an amazing step by RBI to be thinking about security, because it has always been, guarding the, because see, banking at the end of the day, if you're losing your money, it's a very big thing. For some people, their entire savings get wiped out. So it is no laughing matter. But, also one has to think from a user interface point of view, the trade-offs between convenience and security. Mm-hmm. Now, that's something that, has to be. Like, what comes to mind as options are clearly biometrics. Now, biometrics are not safe. Everybody knows that face hacking, etc., can be done. And, like, for instance, even your, using fingerprints, for instance, you know that your fingerprints also, if you're doing hard work and all, it can get erased. So you'll have a problem over there. And you'll have, with Aadhaar, we have had many cases where, it's not working in some cases because those farmers work in the fields and the fingerprints, the biometrics don't work. Face recognition, also your face changes. For instance, I use DigiYatra whenever I'm traveling, because it makes life very convenient. But on many occasions, they've had to do physical checking. I asked them why after doing all that. He's saying, then one of them figured out, in the aap chashma pehen ke aaye the. So because I had my glasses on, I had to remove my glasses. So now I've learned, okay, now I have to remove my glasses. But I thought, you know, these systems could recognize. I mean, what? How does a glass really interfere with facial recognition?
Yeah.
So these systems also are probably with the help of artificial intelligence, etc., are learning. Then there's Absolutely. Passwordless authentication methods like the FIDO2 based authentication system. There are smart cards, there are security tokens, there's SMS based authentication. Yeah, then what your friend said, you know, the email based authentication. But again, emails right. also can be hacked. There's a federated identity management, you know, the method that allows users to authenticate with one service provider, then use that authentication to access other services. But again, yes. I'm saying there's this whole thing of whether a simple user who is doing a UPI transaction will be able to handle all these trade-offs.
True.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how easy or how difficult are you going to make it for the user to access? Now, today, UPI payment just means I take it, I scan the QR code, I use, already I'm using two-factor, I'm using the password twice, two-factor
right.
to get into my payment service provider, then to use the password for my bank. So there's no yes. OTP over there. Okay, and it's still very secure. But now, it doesn't ask for an OTP when I'm doing it for my mobile.
Yeah.
So, but we are using a very secure method, right? Aren't we?
In fact, I mean, it's I don't think it's really UPI's fault, so to speak.
Exactly. So somebody can get hold of your PIN if somebody's observing, because they could put a mirror behind you. They could see the point is people are innovative. Like even if you go to an ATM machine, you know that many people have used these scan the scammers or what they call the devices, scamming devices.
Absolutely.
So they can just for phishing and all that kind of stuff. So there are so many devices in the market. Hackers so always will be a step.
And one very interesting common scam apparently is that in tier 2 and 3, even in urban markets, when UPI started proliferating, you know, scammers would go take a print of their own QR code, own UPI QR, and they'll stick it on top of a merchant's QR.
Yeah.
Now you go to a shop, you scan, you make the payment, and you're telling the guy that, okay, look, I've paid you the $100 that I'm supposed to pay you. And the guy will be like, you know, a lot of times we're like, acha, network theek nahi chal raha hai, so aa jayega message or something. And especially if the shopkeeper knows you, they'll just be like, if you've done it, so it must have come.
Right.
And they'll let it be, except that that money gets credited directly to that scammer's account. And, you know, oftentimes it so happened that it took like multiple lakhs of rupees. It took like the merchant suddenly realized he went to take stuff from his supplier and his transaction got declined. That's when he checked and he realized ki uska account pura khali tha.
Wow.
And he didn't get any payment for like 18 days.
But Shovik, I have a question to ask you.
Yes.
How much, like, you know, how much liquid cash do you keep in your bank? Because you can always, you know, keep limits on your credit card transactions. I think our listeners also who are listening should ask themselves a very sincere question. Have we really taken steps to take care of our own money?
Yeah.
You know,
Absolutely.
Like, I have said, so I don't allow for NFC transactions. So nobody can tap into my.
You can
keep on trying tapping. It's not going to work with me. I hardly keep any, you know, there's a limit on everything. And when I say want to do something on a bigger purchase, I increase the limit immediately and then I reduce it again.
Exactly.
So,
absolutely. Same here.
So I think also some amount of effort has to be put in by users, you know.
True.
That caveat emptor or buyer beware is always there. Even if you go physically shopping with cash, you know you have to protect your cash. So
exactly.
Everywhere, everybody wants your money at the end of the day.
I mean, I actually go a step ahead and I only have like one account on which I make all the transactions and I don't even put that much money in it. I put a little bit of it every time I need to make a transaction. This is apart from additionally on top of the limits, the two-factor authentications, not having NFC, all of these things I do. And I also take the screenshot. I'm very, very conscious because I'm not great at math.
So I'm very particular. So where will you pay that $200 for the rabbit?
I was just going to say Deepthi basically ensures that
you guys are mean.
Deepthi ensures that her bank account has $201. So, you know, flat out whenever she needs to purchase
it. I will boycott this podcast. Shut up.
You know, or you can just buy the rabbit tar one and be done with it.
It's called foot in the mouth syndrome.
Oh God!
But it wasn't.
But you're pushing the foot in the mouth.
But the point is, like, you know, each and every time I keep on saying that what Deepthi said, what you said, what I said, it's always the same thing. It boils down to the same thing that nothing changes. You have to be aware. Yeah. You're responsible for your own money.
See, you know, yes. Philosophically speaking, I think security as a concept is a very, like, a false sort of an idea anyway. But sorry.
I wouldn't go that far to say that.
Well, then you have to live as a millennial.
No, but it's also very true that you have to take care of your own money. You have to protect yourself. Like, for instance, you have, to draw a real world analogy, you have police stations outside, okay? But, you know, if you get into a skirmish, common sense tells you that, you know, if the person is stronger than you, okay, back out. You want to start, you know, becoming a vigilante, or you want to really start, like what they show in Hindi movies. You're going to land into serious trouble. So I think it's also a certain, you know, amount of common sense has to be used in certain places.
True. But,
yeah, that's exactly, in fact, that's exactly what even NPCI has said historically, that folks, you know, it's really not about UPI. It's just that if you don't read the person you are sending money to, and if you still think, they've told us ki aap 2000 bhejo to aapko 20000 milega, and you really believe in it,
exactly.
And you input your security pin and you send money to that person and then you lose everything, it's really nobody's fault.
That old saying, if something is too good to be true, then it's too good to be true. It applies to the stock markets, it applies to your banking,
anything, every quarter.
Companies make their employees do this training for phishing and, you know, all of those other kind of things to protect the company data. And there is so much that you can learn for yourself from those training videos. It's not just about company data. It's also about your own personal data that you can learn from those videos.
Exactly. And they have that questionnaire at the end of it. So you have to answer the question. And that's a very helpful. I keep on telling, I encourage everybody to take those tests. Because you know, you may think that you know every answer, but you know, it's not necessary.
And sometimes we forget. We are human. We forget things. We make mistakes. That's us.
I had a friend, one of my friends, he used to call the pune, or the office pune, give him his credit card and PIN and tell him to, you know, remove it because it's too lazy to go to the ATM. So I told him, I said, is this a good practice? No, he's saying, I trust the guy. I said, but today, tomorrow, if this guy. Yeah, exactly. So he said, no, I keep on changing the PIN. I said, yeah, but you're giving him the PIN each and every time. And tomorrow he has your CVV number. He has he can easily do an online transaction in absence.
My God, there is a thin line between convenience and absolute.
And blind trust also.
Yeah. I don't want to say much because he's our friend. You know, let's
No.
That's one way of living on the edge.
Yeah.
Correct. Totally.
Yeah, but exactly. But we don't have to agree with our friends, so it's okay. I always tell them, I said, we respect your decision, but I don't have to agree with you necessarily.
Absolutely.
My God. Leslie, I wonder if your friend listens to our podcast. It'll be interesting.
Oh, well. We shall reserve that.
Even before meeting us, he'll hate us.
You know, I came across a very interesting McKinsey study which says basically that This year, Gen Zers, they call them. The Gen Z. So many of whom are newly entering the workforce are expected to outnumber baby boomers, at least in the US workplace. I'm sure it will be happen in other places also, like places, countries like Japan and all. Even in India, for that matter of fact, though we do have youngsters coming into the workforce. But the interesting part is, in their study, that Gen Zers or the Gen Z generation have similar expectations and motivations for work as other generations. So they surveyed about 30,000 workers around the world. Okay, this was a McKinsey study. And the Gen Z generation rank meaningful work just as highly as workplace flexibility as a reason for taking up a new job. So this I found very interesting. And again, they made another interesting observation that compare that with boomers who rank compensation first, followed by meaningful work and work workplace flexibility.
So, I think this is you know, this is something that's being spoken about right since the pandemic happened, because I think 2020 and onward is when Gen Z started entering the workforce really. And one of the things that a lot of people spoke about at that time was that Gen Z started working at a time when work from home was a necessity. For us, we've been, you know, going to office all our life, and, you know, going to office every day for work was not like, you know, it wasn't an option. It wasn't like a, okay, I'll go if I feel like, I'll go if traffic is less, my Monday office nahi jata ho, and all of that. We didn't have. And, you know, for me at my first workplace, we used to have a separate 5 days of allotted work from home days, which were almost like luxuries for, you know, us. But I think Gen Z's kind of skipped that, where for them, working from home became a thing, because they would be working from a hill station and they'd be working from a beach on in Goa while, you know, sipping on some cocktails. And I think the way they approached work and the way they were introduced work was so different from us that I don't know, maybe that probably plays
actually
a role in
I have a different
that.
Opinion on this. I think that, you know, there was a different value system. With boomers, there was a different value system.
Yeah.
There were different kind of aspirations. They had to have a job, a home, a family, kids. All of these things were valued at that point of time. When it came to millennials, we faced two recessions, right? We faced a pandemic. We faced so many wars. I mean, of course, boomers did too. But we did face two recessions during our younger period of like a younger period of our career. So for us, it was almost like we are not able to pay our student loans. How can we pay?
Yeah.
How can we even purchase or think of purchasing a house? The inflation rates are so high. So then we let go of that idea of compensation. We were like, okay, compensation is something that's probably never going to happen for us. So then we must look at flexible work hours. We must look at, you know, other things in life that are more immediate. Right.
Yeah.
So that happened. And then it also trickled down to Gen Z, because now environment is very clearly under a huge threat. There's that, you know, at the back of our heads, there's that doomsday thing that's going on over and over again. And social media is no less. You'll find it everywhere. You will find that kind of conversation or indication or a meme or something that'll, you know, influence you.
But Dipti, I have a different question. If that, now this is, I'm playing a devil's advocate out here and a contour view. If the Gen Z thinks that they're so alive and they're so idealistic, okay, and they're talking so much about the environment, why aren't they talking about mobile waste? Why aren't they talking about laptop waste? Exactly my point. So you cannot pick and choose your battles.
If
you have to have that consistency. So while that while there's tremendous amount of awareness, remember that there's a certain age, till a certain age, probably, you know, the McKinsey study, I'm sure, would have considered these factors.
Yeah.
Or perhaps may or may not have. But I think it's important to also consider the fact that till the age of 20, 25, most youngsters are idealists. And in any generation.
Yeah.
So
many of us also would have, you know, we participated in college struggles and we went for political rallies and all. But, you know, and like there's a kind of a joke, you know, that, I mean, I know, of course, it's an, I wouldn't, because it's a little not politically right, so we'll now avoid those jokes. But otherwise, you know, but when you're an idealist up to a certain age, it probably helps because you require to be idealist. But if you're continuously being a vigilante, if you're continuously being, then you have to pay a very different price, which as you start getting more added responsibilities, it as you, I think you did point out that fact. Shavik, to your point of Gen Z being on the beaches and all that, remember that the baby boomer parents are paying for that in many cases.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. In fact, I don't know. I mean, I remember at one of my previous, in fact, at my previous workplace, there was an entire conversation with the guy who had just joined in the middle of the pandemic. And on his second day, he just disappeared. And he came back a week later saying that, oh, you know, my Wi-Fi at the guest house that I was staying at kind of broke down. And my dad said, you have to pay to get it fixed by, out of your budget that I allocated to you. So I couldn't afford it. And he was surprised that we told him that, okay, we don't really need you to do anything else for us.
This has got nothing to do with generation. It's just privilege, and every generation has these people.
That too.
And every generation keeps on bitching about the earlier generation.
That's not fair. You think Gen Z and Gen Alpha are not going to fight? There's something called Gen Alpha also. That's just ailing Gen Z.
Okay, exactly.
Before we sign off, I just have one question, because I really need to clarify this. What exactly is a baby boomer? I know it's not a chewing gum, but
it's all the guy who have retired, the 60 plus generation. The 60 plus kind of stuff.
There is a certain category also, like people from a certain point to a certain
So
60 plus.
I think, 60 to 65 or something like that.
Yeah, so there are boomers.
Those born there are between Gen Xers.
There are boomers, there are Gen Xers, there are millennials, there are Gen Alpha. And right above boomer, there was the great generation. That, oh my God, Shavik is already holding, like he's cupping his.
So you can think, you can think about between Gen Alpha and Gen Z, you'll have the Gen Beta. which generation they are.
There is a crossover generation between millennials and Gen Z. There is that.
Don't get in there now. This is getting too far.
Yeah.
And on that generational note, it is time to end this episode of TechCetra. We're going to continue talking about boomers and Gen Zs and whichever crossover generation that Deepthi wanted to talk about. But until then, it's time for us to say goodbye for this week. It was lovely chatting about, once again, everything under the sun. And key takeaway from this episode, I hope you will know that the safety and security of your money is really in your hands. And if you voluntarily enter your PIN, nobody can really do anything. And on that bombshell, it's time to end. Thank you so much for joining us. See you next week.
Take care.
Be safe, be happy, and only use a safety pin.
So folks, that's it for this episode. You are listening to Mint TechCetra.
You can reach out to us on LinkedIn if you have any questions. Our handles are in the description.
This episode was produced by me, Deepthi Ahuja. It was edited by Amrinder Singh. Catch you next week.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HT Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.htsmartcast.com.